Welcome to the All Sides Reporter Roundtable, an hour where we catch up on the political news of last week and preview the week ahead. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. With us this week is Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Welcome back, Karen.
Hey, how are you?
Morgan Trow, Columbus Bureau Chief of WEWS News 5 Cleveland. Welcome back, Morgan.
Thank you.
And also Aaron Glynn, Statehouse Reporter for Columbus Dispatch. Welcome, Aaron.
Thanks for having me.
So former Ohio State football coach Jim Tressel is now the lieutenant governor for the state of Ohio. Next in line, if anything should happen to Governor DeWine. He was sworn in on Friday. Here is Governor DeWine at last week's press conference announcing his pick.
He has the requisite skill sets. He has the criteria that I outlined. He knows Ohio. Jim Tressel, I trust his judgment. He is a born leader. He's a leader wherever he has been.
And here is what Jim Tressel had to say at that same press conference.
So I know there won't be any lack of things to talk about and think about and work on. I'll have a lot of learning. I don't know this world particularly. Fortunately, I believe in our governor and what he believes in. And my first job is to go to school on that.
All right, Karen. So Jim Tressel is lieutenant governor. Did this pick surprise you?
Well, I think it's really an out-of-the-box kind of thing. I mean, I think there were a lot of folks who expected him to pick somebody more political, somebody who could potentially run for office, not to say that Jim Tressel might not consider running for office, but I think that there was a thought that he would pick somebody a little bit more in the political sphere, because obviously Jim Tressel's never held elected office before. The general consensus, I think, is that he could do very well if he ran statewide. That's still up to him, and he's being very dodgy about whether that's something he wants to do. But I think it was a really interesting choice. It's a name many, many people in Ohio know, and a lot of people really respect what he did. Of course, there was the resignation because of the NCAA violations after the memorabilia for tattoo situation back in 2011, I think, is when he resigned. But I think there's a pretty favorable opinion of him just in general.
Morgan, was there like an audible gasp in the room when they were like, wait, it's him?
So I had heard like 15 minutes before a source text me being like, you're never going to believe this. Hmm. And they told me who it was and my jaw still dropped. Mm-hmm. I think that most every reporter in the room was wide-eyed when we saw it. I mean, it's a really, like Karen said, it's a really interesting pick, but it does make sense when you think about DeWine and what he may want for his legacy. He wants somebody who's going to continue with education. He wants somebody who's going to continue with mental health resources. And those are things that Jim Tressel has talked about wanting to do, talked about wanting to continue bipartisan leadership.
Now, Aaron, we on the reporter roundtable here, I made reporters guess who it would be for several weeks because we were just waiting and waiting and waiting for this pick. And so nobody guessed Jim Tressel, shockingly, but most people guessed a woman just because they thought Governor DeWine would pick a woman. Did you hear about that, hear that too?
Yeah, I heard that rumor as well. And I think that would have made sense. I also thought DeWine might pick a woman for the Senate appointment. So I guess I've been wrong on both counts. But yeah, I think Jim Tressel has a lot of name recognition for as we think about the future governor's race.
Karen, has Ohio ever had a lieutenant governor with no real state political experience, maybe never been elected to something?
I don't know. I mean, we've only been electing lieutenant governors along with the governor since 1978. Before that, they were elected separately. I think it's typically a political job, mm-hmm. though it's a job for a long time that didn't seem to have anything to do. Mm-hmm. And now, since at least for the last 30, 40 years, the lieutenant governor has been the head of a specific agency, like the Department of Insurance or something like that, Commerce, whatever. I don't know exactly what Tressel's role is going to be in that regard, though he has, again, like Morgan said, talked about education. He and DeWine feel like they are a lot alike in a lot of different ways. When you saw the layout of when Tressel was inaugurated, they were there with their wives. Their wives were in red, white, and blue. It felt like this is three couples, being the DeWines, the Trussells, and then the Husteds, who is, of course, John Husted, the most immediate predecessor to Jim Tressel, all kind of cut from the same cloth, all very similar in how they approach things. And I think the question of legacy is something that I think is really interesting here, too, because you've got two people who are running for governor right now in Dave Yost and eventually Vivek Ramaswamy, and they're going to be a little bit more different than DeWine has been and Husted might be, I think.
Morgan, do you want to give us a little refresher? Karen mentioned Tattoogate. It was the scandal that led to Jim Tressel resigning as Ohio State football coach. If that scandal would happen today, he wouldn't be in trouble, I guess, because all the rules are different.
Oh, yeah. So a little refresher on what happened. So back in, 2010, the NCAA started investigating, and the FBI and the DOJ ended up investigating multiple different players and a tattoo shop for allegedly trading memorabilia in exchange for tattoos, such as, championship rings, jerseys, autographs. When they started investigating, allegedly, Tressel was not being upfront about knowing what was going on with his players. The NCAA ended up accusing him of lying and not disclosing in order to keep his players on the field. So with that, he ended up resigning in 2011 and bounced around Youngstown for a bit before landing his job as the president of Youngstown State University.
Did he get asked about Tattoogate at the press conference? I mean, did that
come? He was not asked about it at the press conference, but I did ask about it in my interview with him.
Oh, right. You had a one-on-one with him. Yes.
I had a one-on-one with him, and I asked him about it. I asked what he learned about accountability and transparency. And, his immediate response was, I made a mistake. I should have gotten better counsel. When it comes to that, I think he was more referring to getting second and third opinions, not as much seeking attorney advice. But he did say that he was very busy, and sometimes when you're busy, you don't always do your best work, whatever that means.
Well, and I think for people who weren't around then, weren't watching football, weren't aware, whatever, Jim Tressel became a folk hero when he won in 2002. I mean, that football game was incredible, and it was the first time Ohio State had won a national championship in football in 34 years, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So he had a profile that was kind of larger than life. He'd come in after John Cooper, who had some troubles beating Michigan, and he came in with this just personality that eclipsed a lot of this stuff. And I think people still are remembering that. Now, the question is, will younger voters know who he is? I think that his name recognition continues on. I think now his job is to kind of carry that forward and be that caretaker for the DeWine legacy. And maybe, who knows, if he's going to go ahead and run, he'd be continuing that on.
I think a lot of people also don't see what he did as that bad. When I talk to a lot.
Well, that's what I said. Nowadays, yeah. I don't think he would be in trouble.
No. I don't know what the NIL rules.
Money's changing hands left and right nowadays.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. I think it's totally different now. But I also think that a lot of people even then were like, oh, well, this is being blown out of proportion. He shouldn't be resigning for this. Like, it's not like he did it. Mm-hmm. It's just that he was trying to protect his players or he just didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Aaron, the former lieutenant governor, now U.S. Senator John Husted, he took a big lead for DeWine in economic development. He was front and center with all these data centers that we have now. But do you feel like DeWine in his last, year and a half, wants his legacy to be education? Is that maybe why he did this pick?
I think that's definitely where he's headed. I mean, he just gave his press conference on his budget proposal for the next 2 years. And, he was all about the kids. Kids' mental health, vision, education policy and child care was the first thing he talked about. Tressel obviously has a lot of opinions on education. That's why some of the Democrats in the legislature weren't thrilled about the announcement. But I think because he's got that background, it makes sense that he was DeWine's pick.
They weren't thrilled with the announcement, but they still mostly voted for him, right, Tressel?
No. In the Senate, yes. There was only one Democrat who voted against him in the Senate, and that's Beth Liston from Dublin. But in the House, most Democrats did not vote for him. Mm. And the concerns were, I think, largely about
LifeWise, the Ohio-based program that takes kids off school property to Christian-based activities during the school day. That program was started by Joel Penton, who played for Trestle at Ohio State, as I understand it. And then the other concern was the law that created the situation where Youngstown City Schools, who in a failing school district, were basically moved control of those school district of that school district was moved from the elected school board to a non-elected CEO, and there were some Democrats who had some concerns about that and the effect that had.
This is the All Sides Weekly Reporter Roundtable. We're talking with Karen Kassler from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, Morgan Trowell from News 5 Cleveland, and Aaron Glynn from the Columbus Dispatch. So let's talk a little bit more about the governor's race. We don't know if Jim Tressel wants to be governor in 2026. He certainly has the name recognition to pull it off. But in the race right now, the only declared Republican officially is Attorney General Dave Yost. But we're still waiting for Vivek Ramaswamy's announcement. So, Morgan, his announcement is expected to be about a week from now, right?
Yep. So he is going to be doing, it seems, a tour around the state of Ohio, starting in Cincinnati, coming to the outside of the Columbus area, moving up to the Cleveland area, and then going to Northwest Ohio, Toledo area. You know, we've long been expecting this. He had said repeatedly, you know, he would not be being a part of the Department of Government Efficiency because he wanted to run for governor. And now it is upcoming. They said it was going to be in February, and here we are.
Yeah. And Karen, you wrote a little bit about what his priorities seem to be. So he's already talking about his priorities.
Well, fortunately, with social media, we have a window into a lot of people's thoughts even before they start speaking to us. And so he has a pinned post on his X account that talks about it's a clip of an interview apparently he did where he talks about he wants to be governor of Ohio, or he wants to lead Ohio. I think he never says governor, but read between the lines there, about talking about education. He wants universal school choice, universal including homeschooling. And then he says that he wants more opportunities for merit pay for teachers, principals, administrators. It says teachers or public school teachers are underpaid if they are the best, which is an interesting thing for a Republican who's very strongly supportive of school choice to say. He talks a little bit about wanting a physical fitness focus, which is something that Jim Tressel's also talked about. So I think that's interesting. And then talks about eliminating the state income tax, saying that that is a competitive way to bring jobs to Ohio, which is funny because in DeWine's announcement about the budget, he specifically said, when asked whether there were going to be any income tax cuts, he said he's been governor for 6 years and he has not talked to a single company that has talked about the income tax and whether we should get rid of it or whether it's too high or whatever as a reason for not siding in Ohio. So I think that's something to note there. We're going to hear a lot of talk about the state income tax, I think.
Now, Ramaswamy's focus on education, the saying universal school choice, I mean, is that similar to Ohio's voucher program, or is he meaning different?
I think he wants to expand it to include homeschooling as well. That's another area where I think we're still learning more about where Republicans specifically fall. I mean, all Republicans seem to be in this school choice area, but where are you on that spectrum? Because in Ohio, essentially, we do have universal school choice because any family that wants a voucher can get one. If you were at the higher income levels, you get a smaller voucher, but you could still get one. And most of the vouchers now going out are going to kids who have never been to public school. They've always been in private school. So I think the question is, where does homeschooling fit into that for somebody like Ramaswamy?
Now, Aaron, where do you think Dave Yost fits into all of this? He's been in the race. He seems like he'll stay in the race. He's going to run against Ramaswamy.
Yeah, and it seems like a more traditional path to go from Ohio's attorney general to governor of Ohio. We've seen that before. Yost has definitely been more vocal in his position as attorney general. He's signed a lot of amicus briefs arguing in favor of legal measures the Trump administration took the last time. So I think it'll kind of be interesting to watch Yost and Ramaswamy duke it out on who supports the Trump administration more.
Hmm. There is one other candidate in the race we should probably mention. Yes. Her name is Heather Hill. She's from the Cincinnati area, I believe. And, I mean, very definitely a long shot when you start talking about Yost with the name recognition. He's been raising money. Vivek Ramaswamy with the name recognition and the money that he brings already. And perhaps Jim Tressel with the name recognition that he already has. So she's a dark horse in this candidate, but she is, or in this campaign, but she is officially in the race.
Yeah, she's from Morgan County, and I think she's been on a school board. Is that right?
Oh, yeah,
I
think Morgan County, you're right. So, okay. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so there is another name in there. And also on the Democratic side, we have a name in there. So former Ohio Department of Health Director Dr. Amy Acton is the only declared Democrat in the race. Morgan, do you think any other Democrats will jump in, or is it going to be Amy Acton's race?
Honestly, I don't know right now. I think that a lot of Democrats are not enthused about running for state offices right now, I think because of, you know, the sweeps we've seen by Republicans. But right now, I mean, Amy Acton is a relatively big name. I don't foresee any of the state lawmakers jumping in. We had thought that maybe Allison Russo, the minority leader in the House, might, but it does not seem like that's the case. Former Congressman Tim Ryan had floated being interested, but I don't know if he ever, you know, was actually serious about that. But when it comes down to it, it looks like it's going to be Amy Acton just at this point, but we still have a lot of time.
Yes. Former gubernatorial candidate Richard Cordray was on All Sides last week talking about the dismantling of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in Washington, which he used to direct. And I asked him about his political future, and he shut down the conversation, didn't want to talk about it, very adamantly did not want to talk about it. But he ran for governor.
Yeah, and he actually gave DeWine a race in 2018. It was a lot closer than other races have been. And it's a weird 2026 is going to be a weird year for Democrats, because typically midterms are good for the party out of power. But the question is whether people will consider this Trump's first term or his second term. And if it's his second term, Democrats might not do as well in 2026 as they might have if it were his first term. Mm. But then again, these are, you know, conventional wisdom doesn't even exist anymore, I don't think, because things are so different than they used to be. And so I think Democrats do have to weigh whether they want to go up against some of these folks. We're seeing the musical chairs among the term limited state House Republicans, and whether Democrats want to jump into that. But somebody has to, I guess, right?
We have these candidates declaring in February of 2025 for the governor's race in 26. When would be the deadline? If anyone else is going to jump in,
I think it's soon as possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got to raise money. You've got to raise your name recognition and your ID. Mm-hmm. And the time is a-wasting.
All right. We'll continue to talk more about the musical chairs that Karen mentioned when All Sides continues with our reporter roundtable. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. This is our weekly reporter roundtable, an hour where we talk about all things Ohio politics. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Still with us is Morgan Trow, Columbus Bureau reporter for WEWS News 5 Cleveland. Thanks for being here, Morgan.
Of course.
Also, Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Thanks, Karen.
Hey, it's fun here.
And Aaron Glenn, Statehouse reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks.
And, okay, so before the break, we were talking about the musical chairs that's happening when it comes to all of these offices. So we have, you know, the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, the Auditor, the Treasurer, they're all up for re-election. Is this all because of term limits? Everyone is moving around? Morgan, do you want to give us a little briefing on a few of the people running? We don't have, there's a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So of the office holders, they really are doing a musical chairs. So I think I had a post where I did like the arrows of what they're going to. So if we start with, let's start with Treasurer Robert Sprigg. Robert Sprigg is now trying to go to the Secretary of State's office.
He wanted to be governor. But once he saw Yost and Ramaswamy in there, he decided not to.
He dipped out, endorsed Ramaswamy, and is now running for Secretary of State. Okay. So Secretary of State Frank LaRose is now running for auditor.
Mm.
So Auditor Keith Faber is now running for Attorney General. And Attorney General Dave Yost is now running for governor. So they're all kind of just swapping. They're moving over. So
does that leave any room for any outsiders, Karen?
In the Republican Party, less. But this is something that the party, when you've got so many people, a party that is a supermajority everywhere, this is the kind of problem that you're going to have. And so it's not a huge surprise. It is just kind of everybody moving chairs and everything. Of course, DeWine, I think it's probably safe to say he's done now. And he's been governor for two terms. He's always said that was a job that he really wanted, and he's really enjoyed it. So his departure. And then, of course, John Houston's departure. That was, I think, the sudden thing and the surprising thing, because it was supposed to be, I think a lot of people thought, that he would become governor. Mm-hmm. And then everything happened. So 2026 is going to be a very busy year for all of us, I think.
And former Republican lawmaker Niraj Antani, am I saying that right?
Yes.
So he plans to run for treasurer. He dropped his bid for Secretary of State, but he posted on social media that feeling when the good old boys club didn't invite you to their game of musical chairs. What do you think he meant by that?
Well, so I think that he announced his run for an office, and then Robert Sprigg moved into it. He wanted to run for Secretary of State. Robert Sprigg, who has way more name ID, hence more fundraising ability. I think it was probably very disappointing for a lot of Republicans who aren't as well known. But that being said, he also did have a problem when he was in the state Senate with not getting along with the Republicans in the state Senate. So if he was going to win that, I don't know if that was even possible. But he's running for treasurer, and so is State Senator Christina Rogner. She also just announced.
And Antani isn't the only lawmaker that expressed an interest in Secretary of State, because Senator Teresa Gavarone has also said that she's considering launching a campaign.
So we could have a competitive primary in some of these races. But then, as we mentioned right before the break, Karen was just saying we need a Democrat to run in each of these, right?
Well, I mean, okay, you don't need, I guess, but I'm just saying Democrats, you know, this is a way that Democrats can get out there. I mean, I know that, for instance, talking to former Democratic Party Chair David Pepper, he's talked about running, having somebody on the ballot in every race. Mm-hmm. And I think he's talking primarily about Ohio House and Senate districts. But really, if you have an office on the ballot and you don't have a Democrat, then that is an opportunity, arguably, that the party is wasting. And I keep thinking back to when Larry Householder in 2020, when he was arrested, he ended up getting elected again that same year because there was nobody who was running against him. So not that that person would have won. He was in a very Republican district. But the idea that there is an open position for the party and there's nobody there to take advantage of that potentially, I mean, that's kind of an effective gerrymandering and term limits, at least when it comes – or gerrymandering when it comes to the legislature. But on the statewide offices, you know, those aren't gerrymandered. Anybody can take those – That Democratic or Republican Party position in terms of running in the primary.
I don't have a good memory to remember how long has it been since we had like a mix of Republicans and Democrats in all of these elected offices.
Probably 2010. Okay. I'm sorry, no, 2006 rather, because 2010 was the Republican tsunami that wiped everybody out. But in 2006, you had Governor Ted Strickland, you had Attorney General Mark Dan, you had Secretary of State Jennifer Bruner, all Democrats. I think Mary Taylor was the only Republican in elected statewide office that year.
Hmm. Okay. So, but it is possible to have a mix, right? I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. But this state has gone very very Republican. It has been for going back to the 90s, but it has gone really Republican in those statewide elections every 4 years. And Republicans have really dominated ever since. Well, 2006 was kind of an anomaly there, but ever since then, they've really dominated all those statewide offices.
Well, another topic that I wanted to pivot to is diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. They expanded rapidly in 2020 after the murder of George Floyd, and many welcomed the efforts. Others thought that they went too far, but now they're really under fire. President Trump issued an order to get rid of DEI programs at the federal level. The Ohio Senate last week passed a bill that bans Ohio public college campuses from having DEI programs, and that bill now moves to the House. It's a bill Republicans say will stop the liberal indoctrination on college campuses. Democrats call it an anti-union, anti-free speech bill. Morgan, set the scene last week when the Senate was voting on this. It's called Senate Bill 1, but it's a higher education overhaul, basically, is what it is. But there were protests, right?
Yep, there were protests as soon as the vote took place. So the vote was along party lines, except for two Republicans who went against it. That is State Senator Tom Patton from the Northeast Ohio area. He is one of the most pro-union members of the state house. And then State Senator Bill Blessing, who is from the Cincinnati area, and he said that he's always been a proponent of like academic freedom and free speech. So they went against it, but still, you know, as soon as that number was announced, where it was a clear Republican win, students stood up and they started chanting and saying, you know, the Senate killed higher ed. Jerry Serino, the bill sponsor, killed higher education. They were escorted out, but they continued to chant. I think it's just it was an 8.5-hour hearing the night before. People have been opposing this bill more than bills that I've seen in recent history. It has been extremely controversial on all parts of it. There are 800 and I believe it's 37 people who submitted testimony in opposition just on the Senate side, and there were only 14 in favor. None of them were students who went to public universities. I think it's just very telling that students have been at the forefront of this every single time during the protests.
Now, Aaron, it moves to the House. Do you think it'll be the same? We'll see a hearing with 800 some people testifying against it, and then do you think it'll change at all? Will there be any changes?
Well, yeah, as Morgan said, students are really passionate about this, so I think we'll continue to see protests. But House Speaker Matt Huffman has said that he's supportive of many of the changes that Senate Bill 1 made, so I think it will probably pass through the House without much difficulty.
I think there will be some issues around the union provisions. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why it didn't pass last time, last General Assembly. Whether there is enough Republicans to side with the Democrats on the union provisions, we don't know.
This is the bill says that faculty cannot strike.
Yes,
right?
Apologies.
Is that what you mean?
So, yeah. Yes. So there are a couple different aspects that would impact union rights, which include the ability of faculty to strike. It also includes collective bargaining and how they can collectively bargain. There's also it takes away what we know as tenure. Mm-hmm. So it includes a lot of different reviews that the professors have to go through. So a lot of education advocates and a lot of people who have universities in their district who rely on teachers for support are obviously feeling the pressure when it comes to it. I don't think that, I mean, it could still very, very possibly pass, but I think it's going to be a bit harder to pass in the House than the Senate.
Karen, last year, this bill did pass in the Senate, right? But then it never even came up for a vote in the House, did it?
It passed a House committee. Mm-hmm. And Serino has talked several times about how that there were concessions that were made to try to get the bill through the House last time that he was not willing to make this time around. And frankly, he may not need to, because last time the opposition seemed to be coming in large part from Speaker Jason Stevens, who had basically blocked it from coming to the floor, saying it did not have the votes to pass. Well, he's got now Speaker Matt Huffman, who supported the bill when it was in the last General Assembly so strongly that he tried to put it into the budget. So there's really no opposition from the leadership, I think, on this. And so I'm not sure if there's a possibility. I think Morgan's right that the union concerns are a problem for some members of the House. But Serino says he has no intention of making those concessions again and dropping anything like that.
Now, this bill started because they're saying that there's a liberal indoctrination at institutions of higher education. So each of the provisions in the bill is related to that, right, Karen?
Well, I mean, that's the real question is what does he mean? What's the evidence of that? What specifically do these things like DEI and intellectual diversity and all these things really mean in practical terms? And that's where the opposition has come out and saying, what you're going to do is you're going to scare people away. You're going to scare students away. You're going to scare teachers away.
How do you police what's happening in each individual classroom, too?
Exactly. And so will that chill free speech because professors won't want to bring it up or kids won't want to bring it up while they're students in class? You know, the question of enforcement is, I think, a real concern for the opponents because they feel like this is a bill that is very vague and that there's no real reason for it. And that's the other question. Cirino himself has said that some colleges and universities were already making changes back when it was Senate Bill 83 last time around, but he still feels strongly enough to go forward with this, though it does only apply to public universities, not to private institutions. So that's another important point to get out there.
I mean, Ohio State and other institutions are already taking steps to comply. One DEI person at Ohio State retired. Another, Professor Wendy Smooth, left her DEI position and just returned to her previous department at the university. So, I mean, this is that move, and I can't even say whether that move's in reaction to the federal level in the Trump administration or if it's in reaction to this bill.
I think it's just people are seeing the writing on the wall, and if there's a way for them to pivot their jobs and so that they can keep them, I think that a lot of people are very nervous right now, and they're trying to take the pragmatic approach of, okay, well, if they are trying to get rid of diversity initiatives and I'm a diversity officer, I'm not going to be willing to take that chance.
Do we know, looking way ahead, Aaron, would the governor sign this if it does pass the House? I don't know.
The Dispatch Bureau interviewed DeWine last week, and he said, you know, he doesn't commit to signing bills before they're on his desk. But he said that he is sympathetic to the idea that there should be more open discussion in classrooms. He didn't use the word indoctrination, but said that students should feel free to ask questions about controversial issues.
And that question of what's the evidence of this? Where's the proof that this is needed? I mean, Senator Beth Liston on the floor made a comment about how Republicans, you folks run all the offices in Ohio.
A
lot of you went to public universities in Ohio and you weren't indoctrinated. So where's the evidence that this is happening? And I think that's, again, the question is what is specifically happening that is problematic? People such as Senator Jerry Cirino, who's not only backed this, but also backed the 5 independent academic centers that are at Ohio State and 4 other universities. Mm-hmm. He said that students with conservative perspectives are afraid to come forward. They're afraid that they can't speak their minds. And that's part of the evidence that he will bring up that says this is needed. So, but the question is, where's the proof of it? Is there any proof? Is this really a problem? Are these universities really indoctrinating kids, or are professors teaching classes the way they always have and encouraging people to think for themselves?
Well, I guess we'll wait and see what happens in the House. I'm going to pivot to another topic. A Franklin County judge has ordered Governor DeWine to get back nearly $1 billion in federal funds and give them to Ohioans who have been waiting for unemployment benefits since 2021. This is nearly 300,000 Ohioans could be affected by this ruling. Karen, you wrote about this. Why did a judge step in here?
Well, this has been going on since July of 2021. And I wrote on X about this, that I've gotten more calls, more emails, more questions about this particular story and the lawsuit that was filed over this than anything else I think I've written in the last couple of years. This was during the pandemic. There was this pandemic unemployment assistance that was offered by the federal government. And a lot of red states, including Ohio, decided to cut that off early under pressure from the Chamber of Commerce and the Restaurant Association. Hospitality industry, saying
they couldn't find workers
exactly
because they were getting this unemployment money.
Yes. So the program was supposed to end in September 2021. The state ended it in June. So that was several months that those $300 checks weren't coming to those Ohioans. Mark Dan, former attorney general in Northeast Ohio, led the lawsuit saying, no, DeWine did not have the authority to do that. That's a legislative issue. And so that started the lawsuit again back in 2021. It's worked its way all the way up to the Ohio Supreme Court and then came back down to Judge Michael Holbrook's courtroom. And he had kept the case alive kind of by briefing things other than that issue that went to the Ohio Supreme Court. So the case continued on, essentially. And so now he's saying the state needs to go and collect that money before it gets reappropriated by the federal government to something else. The state will likely appeal, so it's probably not over.
So you had audio from Mark Dan where you said he sued in July of 2021. Here he is talking about who will benefit.
I bet you 95% of the class members don't have $400 in the bank for an emergency. At least that's based on the data that's out there. So yes, this money will come in. They'll pay their bills. They'll pay for, you know, $7 eggs for their kids for a few weeks, and hopefully they will benefit from it.
Still a politician there. You can hear that. $7 eggs. Still a Democratic politician
He's rounding up the eggs, yes. So you're saying that DeWine is not going to go ask the federal government for this money. He'll just appeal it.
I think we're still waiting to hear what the state plans to do. But, I mean, he and Republicans who wanted to end the program early said that they felt that it was making it more difficult for businesses to hire people and bring back that workforce after the pandemic. So I don't know that that's changed. That attitude's changed. So,
with the Biden administration not there anymore and the Trump administration in, is the money still there?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think right now it is, but and that's why Dan wanted to and other Democrats have come forward saying that the state needs to do this right away, that this will help, again, some of the poorest people in Ohio, people who are don't have an emergency savings fund, who are working minimum wage, that kind of stuff. But it remains to be seen whether that happens.
This is the Reporter Roundtable on All Sides, and we will continue our discussion in just a moment. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Weekly Reporter Roundtable from All Sides. I'm Amy Jurevich. With us in the studio, we have Aaron Glynn from the Columbus Dispatch, Karen Kassler from the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, and Morgan Trowell from News 5 Cleveland. And I was going to get to Governor DeWine last week postponed three more executions that had been scheduled for this year. This is in keeping with a current practice, so there's an unofficial moratorium right now. So, Morgan, what do you make of this idea that we're just going to halt the executions for now?
Well, Governor Mike DeWine says that as long as he's governor, there will be no executions. He has stuck by that since he became governor, and I do not think that clearly they're not going to happen. He said they're not going to happen. We will see what happens in the future, though, when we have a new governor. All of the candidates who are running, except for potentially Jim Tressel, are on the Republican side, in support of the death penalty. So we're going to have to see what happens.
There is a bill at the State House, which I don't know how much traction it's going to have, that would ban the death penalty, but also ban state funds going to abortion providers, which is already illegal, and ban state funds going to end-of-life procedures, which is we don't allow assisted suicide in Ohio. So I don't know what kind of traction that has other than it has bipartisan support. But that's something that if it does pass, then that obviously would have an effect on whoever becomes governor after DeWine.
And while in office, President Biden dialed back executions, but President Trump signed one of his executive orders last month to resume federal executions of death row inmates. So is this, Aaron, an example of DeWine just going against a Trump policy? Or it's his own idea, yeah.
Well, DeWine has said that Ohio can't get the drugs that are normally used for lethal injection, and that Ohio, compared to other states, has some difficulty because it's public when these companies sell drugs to Ohio. And so other Republicans have introduced legislation about using nitrogen gas, like I believe Alabama has used and Oklahoma has used for executions. There are some concerns about that, some Eighth Amendment concerns about whether nitrogen gas is like an ethical form of execution. So, yeah, I think we might expect to hear more from DeWine in his last term as governor about his personal feelings on the death penalty.
Right. I'm not sure who, I don't remember who introduced the bill that Karen mentioned, but has Governor DeWine said that he would support that? I mean, if it abolishes the death penalty?
I mean, that's, my colleague Sarah Donaldson has talked about that being a very strongly Catholic bill because it really hits a lot of issues with the death penalty, abortion, and assisted suicide. Mm-hmm. That hits all three of those. Obviously, DeWine's very strongly Catholic, so there is that. But, I don't know what kind of traction that bill has because, like Morgan said, you've got a lot of state officials who are still out there who are very strongly supportive of the death penalty as at least an option for prosecutors to have as they go into court. I'm waiting to see if we get the reintroduction of the bill that would allow for the use of fentanyl to execute prisoners, which is just quite a I'm not sure how serious that proposal was from Representative Scott Wiggum, but it certainly got some attention.
Yeah, one of those things that makes you go, okay. All right. Well, speaking of Trump policies as well, as President Trump continues his aggressive attacks on federal government programs and spending, more Ohio organizations are feeling the effects. Another group that has felt that are immigrants. Aaron, you have written about this. A Democratic representative has expressed concerns over a House bill. What are the concerns related to immigration that you wrote about?
Yes. So there are some sanctuary cities in Ohio, like Cincinnati and Columbus, where the local Democratic leaders have said they don't want to use city resources to enforce these federal immigration policies. So this bill would not give those so-called sanctuary cities homeland security funds. So it would really cut into their budgets. And Democratic representatives held a press conference last week kind of talking to immigrants in Ohio about what they should do in the event that they like encounter an ICE officer and kind of speaking specifically about their concerns. One immigrant population that we've heard a lot about in Ohio is the Haitians in Springfield, who most of them are legally in Ohio under the Temporary Protected Status Program, which right now doesn't expire until next February 2026. But Trump could change that at any time.
Democratic Representative Anita, is it Samani? Identified herself as an immigrant. And what did she have to say about all of this?
Well, she's also an OBGYN. We know that Trump immigration policies, ICE officers can now go into hospitals, schools, and churches. And she said that, you know, patient confidentiality still applies. Doctors don't have to disclose a patient's immigration status. And so she was letting Ohio immigrants know that they can still seek medical care in this time.
She was encouraging them not to be afraid to go to the doctor, go to the hospital.
Right.
Okay. Well, also related to federal funding, Morgan, where you wrote about how federal funding will impact things here in Ohio. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So with the Department of Government Efficiency and under tech mogul Elon Musk's watch, they are asking for all federal agencies to lay off all probationary employees and some new hires. Probationary employees are people who've been there typically less than 2 years. When it comes to this, this is going to impact already 200,000 Americans in total or federal workers in total. We don't know how it's going to impact Ohio yet. I've talked with a couple different agencies. NASA, which we have a really large NASA population here in Ohio, especially in Northeast Ohio with the Glenn Research Center. They said that they're going to comply, but they don't know what it looks like, and it's too premature to talk about right now. You know, we have other agencies that are here. I mean, the VA, we already know that a lot of veterans face issues when it comes to getting doctor's appointments, when it comes to getting help with mental health services. The VA is going to have layoffs. We know that for a fact. So right now, nobody knows how this is going to impact them or which employees that they're able to lay off. But the layoffs are completely legal because probationary employees, you typically can lay them off or you can fire them for any reason or no reason at all.
Mm. Now, and federal funding impacts everywhere. I mean, Ohio State and Nationwide Children's stand to lose tens of millions of dollars related to medical research, too, because there's federal funding that touches a lot of aspects that you don't even realize.
Oh, yeah. We were worried about how it was going to impact the state budget. Until there was that judge that freezed his federal freeze. When it comes to OSU and other institutions that have really large research bases within them, we have no idea how it's going to impact any of the research. I know a lot of cancer researchers are very worried right now. It is just all up in the air. I feel like a lot in this administration is up in the air.
Karen, does the state have room in its budget to make up the federal funding if it loses it?
Well, I mean, it depends on where it is. When you start talking about things like Medicaid, that is the largest part of the federal or of the state budget. And so if there are significant cuts in Medicaid, that's a problem. And Medicaid this time is forecast people are forecast to be sicker in Medicaid. So there's, you know, concerns in that area. The budget folks will always tell you that they budget conservatively and they always try to anticipate issues here, but I think the uncertainty is a real concern for a lot of people. I think, you know, not only at the budget level and at the state level, but also individual people. Over the weekend, I've been reading stories about people who found out, you know, 4 hours ago that they had just lost their job at a federal park or now the FAA, there's mass layoffs happening in that in the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. So I think the uncertainty is really concerning for a lot of people.
Well, and Aaron, I feel like local governments will look to the state to help them with funding. And if the state is looking to the federal government, it's eventually someone's going to run out of money.
Right. And yet local governments are trying to figure out how much to budget around this time, too. And, you know, how much they're going to have for, you know, regular things like roads and police forces. So it is all up in the air.
And you know, I mean, the state budget obviously includes a lot of funding for local schools. We're still trying to figure out exactly where the full funding of the Fair School Funding Plan actually is, because it's not fully funded in the sense that it's using information and salary and other data from 2 years ago. And so that's not fully funded. So there's a lot of questions about that, I think, along with everything else.
Yeah, and Governor DeWine released his budget, and we talked about it a little bit here and there, but then I think Jim Tressel kind of like took the eclipsed, that's the word I was looking for. He eclipsed the budget. Is now the time? I mean, over the next few months, Morgan, they're going to just really dig into the budget. Do lawmakers look at it line by line?
I think no. I don't think that they do.
Do you all?
No. There is an extent to which a lot of lawmakers do look through it. I think a lot of the aides look through it. I think that the policy staff looks through it. But, I mean, we're talking about like a 580-page document. This is huge. When it comes to reading line by line, I think that they know the initial values. And I think as we get through the hearing process, a lot of people, like I bet like Chair Brian Stewart and Vice Chair Mike Davila, Ranking Member Bridewell Sweeney, they're all on top of it. But I think when it comes to this, the biggest concern that I'm hearing, and I've been following this for months, is the public education spending. That is what I've gotten more comments about than anything else. Republican leaders had threatened to cut public school spending more than $666 million from the budget. That's a major, major deal to local districts. So that is really one of the big things to focus on. I think that we're also going to be seeing a lot of stuff for corrections, of course, Medicaid, mental health services. But DeWine's budget is pretty bipartisan. When it goes to the House and when it goes to the Senate, a lot of that stuff is going to be stripped from it. A lot of tax increases are also probably going to be stripped.
Yes, there's the doubling of the sports gaming tax. There's the additional taxes and changes to marijuana laws. I mean, there's a lot in the budget to consider. Karen, what will you be watching in the coming weeks when it comes to the budget?
I think the clock's ticking on that sports gambling. I mean, it's gone from when it was first instituted in the, I think, two budgets ago, it was 10%, and then it went to 20%, now at 40%. I think there are a lot of lawmakers who have real concerns about that. Though, the real question is, DeWine wants to increase that to set up a fund for sports facilities to draw from when they want to upgrade and not have to come to the state and ask them for money. Well, if you don't want to do that, then do you want to put state money towards some of these sports facilities, which is going to anger a lot of people? So I think the proposal about increasing the tax on cigarettes to fund a tax credit for working parents for each kid up to 6 years old is really interesting because it's a continuing fight that DeWine's been having with the tobacco industry and trying to stop smoking in general. But it's also a tax increase.
Yeah.
And it does help working families, but it's also a tax increase.
So I guess we'll just see. We have about 20 seconds left. Erin, is there anything in the budget that you are going to be focusing on in the coming weeks?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see where that child tax credit goes. And, you know, DeWine has said that he wants to continue continue funding for the voucher program as well as this Fair School funding plan. So we'll see how that shakes out.
We'll see. All right. Well, I want to say thank you to Erin Glynn, State House reporter for Columbus Dispatch. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Morgan Trowell, a Columbus Bureau reporter for News 5 Cleveland. Thank you, Morgan.
No, thank you.
And Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks, Karen.
Happy Monday.
And this has been the Reporter Roundtable on All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.